Into the Weird, episode 27, Forbidden Kisses.
Into the Weird, a podcast celebrating the madness and magnificence of the mighty Marvel Bronze Age. I'm your host, Bill D, and alongside me is my partner in crime, Herman the Leprechaun Lowe. How are you, buddy?
Hey, Billy. Top of the morning to you, my lad. From Ireland. Jolly old Ireland. No, geez, my Irish accent sucks. So, just to get things clear, are you referring to weird, obscure Bronze Age Marvel villain called the Leprechaun, or
no? I'm thinking of Jennifer Aniston in that cheesy movie.
the horror movie Leprechaun with Warwick Davis, right, in the title role. Yeah. So yeah, I saw the first one. Cheesy and goofy, but yeah, bad horror is kind of our cup of tea.
Everybody's got to watch something a little like cheesy, gory, just silly. You got to throw one in every once in a while, even if you're just like into hardcore.
Yeah, that's right. You got to wait for St. Patrick's Day, pour your Guinness, and then get into a fight, or organize a fight between some Catholics and Protestants, and then watch some Warwick Davis doing a leprechaun. Oh, man, I've probably pissed off our entire Irish, contingent of the listenership here, right? But apologies. But Billy, no, you and I, what we're discussing today, our topic is so far from the coasts of Ireland. We've got a bit of a connection. I mean, you're way back, you're Irish, aren't you? Of Irish descent, I think.
My wife, too. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Yep.
So, there's the connection, the link there, listeners. We're not totally crazy. we're still got all our marbles, and so what we're going to be talking about, though, is something we've been excited for, I believe, for a while, for the last 2 months, I'd say. Mm-hmm. And that stems from a recent Disney Plus TV show called WandaVision. Now, mm-hmm. we won't be talking about the TV show. I mentioned it on an earlier show, I think two shows back, but what this inspired us to do is, in fact, talk about my favorite Avenger, neck and neck with Thor for me. And that is, of course, the awesome android, the synthetic sensation, or whatever you would call him, the Vision. And he's always been one of my favorite characters in Marvel, not just my favorite Avengers. And Scarlet Witch, I also like her. I could take her or leave her, but yeah, she's a mainstay for me, and believe what I mean, in the Avengers, at least I like her in the lineup. Mm-hmm. So you and I decided to do, since we're everything's trending, WandaVision lately, we've decided to hop on that wagon and then champion a bit of the android and his lady love of the Avengers. So Billy, I want to ask you, before we start with the show proper, what's your history with the Avengers? The reason I'm asking you that first is because you and I have actually never talked Avengers comics on this podcast. So, you know, on Into the Weird, they're normally not considered weird enough, but there are very weird issues. I'm particularly thinking about one that in our future, Avengers 200.
Oh, no.
It'll get icky and weird in that episode. But that's way ahead in the future. I want to know your origin with the Avengers and then segue into your first encounter with the Vision and the Scarlet Witch, if you can.
Yeah, I mean, when I first started, you know, buying comics on the regular and like not just reading a scant issue here or there and actually collecting, it was just Spider-Man and X-Men. But I don't know if there was like a crossover or something happened, and I ended up seeing some issues of Avengers West Coast. And both of them were in the issue or issues of whatever storyline it was I had read at the time. And I was like, So then I started to grab some Avengers. But for some reason, I didn't grab really much current. And then I kind of went backwards. And I remember one of the first, you know, big storylines I bought was one of the best Avengers stories ever, Under Siege. But, you know, that's a story for another day, because they're not prominent in that story. But, I really liked both of those characters right from the get-go. And I do like Scarlet Witch, you know, a bit more than you. I know she's not one of your super favorites, but I like her quite a bit, even in some of the storylines, you know, late 90s and early 2000s that came out there. I still liked her character quite a bit. Haven't really read much of her, you know, in the recent years, but really enjoy her character a bit, and I love the Vision. I love that character, you know, especially Roy Thomas, John Buscema era. Oh, man, so good.
Yeah, for the longest time, you know, the Vision and Scarlet Witch obviously were an item, and that's how you read them. You always read them in tandem with each other, right, Billy? I remember as a kid, at least, it was like that for me. And then, you know, there was a time when I fell off of reading Avengers comics. I was still reading X-Men in the late 80s, but, you know, for some reason, I don't know exactly why, I think the issues weren't easy to come by, the Avengers issues. So I finished up, I think it was around about the time Legacy of Kang, not Legacy of Kang, there was the storyline with Dr. Druid and Kang and the multiple Kangs from different timelines and realms. You remember where She-Hulk was still part of the team and Dr. Druid fell in love with a female Kang? Sort of. And that's when I was still loving the Avengers. And then suddenly the comics weren't available anymore on the spinner racks. You know, because South Africa had comic book stores at that point in time, but nowhere near where I lived. So, you know, I only started regularly going to comic book stores in the early 90s. So this was around about 1987, 1988, right? So, you know, the Vision and Scarlet Witch, they were long gone, at least in the pages of the Avengers at that time. Not long gone, but, you know, it felt like that to me, that there's like 20 issues that they haven't appeared regularly. And it was after the whole Vision Quest debacle, you know, where he briefly turned fascist. Not really, but tried to take over the computers of the world. And, but my first encounter with the Vision was much earlier, because in that long box that my uncle had gifted me that got me into comics when I was 4 years old, there was an unbroken run of Avengers comics. Now, not a lot. You know, Billy, there was possibly 10, I would say, you know, with a gap of maybe one issue between some of them. But the issues that they were, obviously this was, earlier Avengers issues, even from before I was born, but because we got them late, that's why it seems that I got to reading Avengers very early on. This was early 70s issues, written by one of your favorites, man, Steve Englehart.
Oh, yes.
And he had a great tenure on the title. And we'll go through famous Avengers runs and the creators who brought it to us. But, you know, Englehart was writing this. And this was Avengers, I think it was Avengers 144 to at least Avengers 152. And I think I did not have Avengers 146, although I picked that up later. And the Vision and the Scarlet Witch featured prominently in those comics. And I remember my favorite among these issues was the issue where Thor fought Kang. And that was a tremendous battle. But then, so that's how I became a Thor fan, because that was also my first I had read a standalone Thor issue before from his own title, but that one was the one where he fought the man beast.
Okay.
You remember that half wolf looking guy?
Yeah.
Then after that, I fell in love with Thor, but I didn't fall in love with him as an Avenger yet. You know, so it happened in this run that I got from my uncle's long box. But my favorite issue of that run was issue 147, which I wanted to talk about on this show, but because it's sort of in the middle of a storyline featuring the Serpent Crown and the Squadron Supreme Earth, you might remember. And it featured the Vision and the Scarlet Witch prominently, because essentially what happens is the Scarlet Witch and the Vision and the Beast and Captain America and Iron Man, they end up being transported by the Roxxon Corporation to this alternate Earth where the president has the Serpent Crown, which basically can control anybody's mind, right? It's from Lemuria, the ancient rival of Atlantis. And then, the president was using that to control the Squadron Supreme, not the Squadron Sinister this time around. This was the good squadron. Mm-hmm. And then it was the Avengers versus the Squadron. And that always makes for a great fight, because essentially it's the Avengers versus the Justice League, right, Billy?
Mm-hmm.
So in this issue, though, Vision shows how truly badass he is. And Scarlet Witch, too, to an extent. What happens is the Avengers have to flee, but they've got the Serpent Crown in tow. And the Squadron pursues them. And Scarlet Witch is, she's corrupted briefly by the power of this crown. And she becomes incapacitated, and the Vision heads back for her. But the rest of the Avengers don't know that they're lagging behind, so they're still on the run. Vision heads back to save his lady love, and he runs smack dab into the Squadron. And this is Hyperion, Golden Archer, Lady Lark, and then I think it was, only the three of them. So it's not the whole squadron, but basically very powerful members. And the Vision takes them all out. with his, even Hyperion stood no chance against the Vision. I mean, he blasts Golden Archer with his eye beams, and eventually Lady Lark too. And then he has this knockdown, drag-out battle with Hyperion. And he manages to get the drop on Hyperion with his molecular disruption punch. Right, Billy, a signature move of the Vision. And then while this is happening, the Scarlet Witch is fighting her own battle against the Serpent Crown, and she triumphs. And that's it. That's how the comic ends, with them leaving the squadron members, lying in a gutter and them walking away and with the Serpent Crown. And, that issue, I reread it over and over, wondering who the heck is this red-faced dude with this little diamond on his forehead, and who's this stunning beauty? And they share this like emotional kiss with a tear running down Wanda's face at the end there.
I was just going to say, they have a little makeout session while their enemies are laying there unconscious. I'm looking at it right now. There's a trade out actually I have, and it's called The Avengers, The Serpent Crown. And it's 141 to 144 and 147 to 149. And I'm looking at it right now.
Oh, dude, that's amazing. Isn't that a great fight? I mean, at one point in time, Hyperion wraps a lamppost around the Vision, but the Vision becomes diamond hard. And after that, he just like fades through the pavement, becomes ethereal. Mm-hmm. Oh, man, that's a great battle. I love that fight so much. I mean, Hyperion gives it his all. He hits the Vision with his most powerful blows while the Vision's diamond hard. And the Vision just says, "I have no time for you, bud." And he says something like, Hyperion's got this whole rant about he's the greatest, right? He says something like, "You humbled me, Avenger, something no man or creature has ever done and or will ever do a second time." And then he keeps screaming and he says, "I'm invincible, invulnerable." And then Vision just cool and collected, just nonchalantly says, while he's taking these blows in the face, he says, "Are you Hyperion? Even when you face the unearthly powers of the Vision." And he just reaches into his chest and disrupts them atomic molecules of poor Hyperion, leaving him in the dirt. So, Billy, I'm glad you have that issue at hand, because I wanted to discuss that one, but you understand how that would be difficult, because it's right in the middle of a storyline. We'll have to have done the previous issue and the one following this one. So it would have been tough to pick just one issue But this was my first encounter with the Vision, and I fell in love with the character. And I was in love with Wanda, too, for a bit there, mm-hmm. you know what I mean, Billy? Until, you know, some Avengers storylines, she really becomes a little bit irritating for me. But, you know, the character as played in the Marvel Cinematic Universe is an amazing character for me. Almost, I'm not going to say better than the comic book character, because the comic book character, I think, is more nuanced. You know, that sounds weird because of WandaVision, the TV show, bringing out so much of the character of Wanda Maximoff. But for me, it's true because the comic book character has a longer history, and there have been more stories featuring Wanda, more ups and downs. Her life has gone through, you know, all of these hills and valleys, and actually she's been through hell. So, so I'm going to say I still prefer the comic book Wanda, you know, but you and I, we both love Elizabeth Olsen as the Scarlet Witch on the screen. She's just a vision.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Ever wish you could sip cocktails and discuss great books with your friends while hanging out in a rundown piano bar? Here on the Literary Guys podcast, that's what we do. I'm Dr. Gordon McCallan.
And I'm author Zachary Kellyan. Each month, we discuss books from two different views of modern masculinity.
From both a gay
and a straight perspective.
From To Kill a Mockingbird
to future governors in the jungle trying to kill a predator. We welcome everyone to join our conversation on the good and toxic of what literature and pop culture have to say about masculinity. So pour yourself a drink and join us now for Season 3.
Literary Guys. That's G-U-I-S-E. LiteraryGuys.com.
I see what you did there.
Well, you know what? I also like that era, too, quite a bit because one of my other favorite female characters, female Avengers, joins the team around that time. Patsy Walker, Hellcat.
Oh, geez. I almost thought you were going to say Mantis.
Whoa.
No, that was beforehand. That was before that. Patsy Walker is great. And as a defender, she was fantastic. But if you had said Mantis, this podcast would be over. This one would leave you in the dirt, Billy. This one. I hate that this one crap of Mantis.
Yeah, and then it's like, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, but when she first meets the Vision, she's like, you know, this one is horny. It's like, calm down. The robot, like, relax. And then Scarlet Witch looks at her like, don't even try it. It's great.
Dude, I'm going to speak on that later when we get to my segment. There's a whole segment about that. Jeez, that was funny. But yeah, so, you know, you and I are both big fans of the Avengers. We're big fans of this era of the Avengers because some of our favorite writers wrote it. Starting with Roy Thomas, you know, after he took the reins from Stan Lee, and then Roy created the Vision based off of the old Golden Age Vision named Arcus, created by Joe Simon and Jack Kirby, right, Billy? So now, just to give a bit of background to the listeners before we get into our discussion proper, which will feature an issue, by the way, listeners. Billy, you've picked one of your favorite Avengers issues featuring the Vision. And it's a great issue that you picked because it brings almost everything about his origin and his, you know, greater social context together.
Sure.
But before that, before we get to that issue, which will leave the listeners in suspense for, I'm going to quickly give a brief rundown on, you know, the history of, well, just the origin of the Vision and the Scarlet Witch. We'll start with the Scarlet Witch because she debuted first in the pages of Marvel Comics way back when in the original X-Men number 4 in March 1964, right, Billy? And created by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. And she's got a very convoluted origin because it's been, you know, revamped a bit. It's been retconned. You know, at one point in time, she and her brother Pietro, who's of course Quicksilver, as you all know, who died in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but he's still alive and well in our time. I've never been much of a fan of Quicksilver, really, Billy. I mean, you know, when he joined the Avengers, he was fine, but he still had some of that Magneto Brotherhood of Evil arrogance that, you know, humans are beneath him. And yeah, after the Scar... What do you think about him?
Yeah, he's a complete pecker. That's why I like him. You know, he's got like this arrogance and this attitude about him. So then when he gets humbled, it's more the better. It's great.
Yeah, no, but, you know, he's an important part of Marvel for me. I do like him because Marvel needs a speedster. We're not going to go with a wizard. No, heaven forbid. So Quicksilver.
Like 800 years.
Yeah. Good one. So Quicksilver is the best bet. And, you know, I do like him as, you know, a superpowered being. I just don't always like his personality. But, you know, like you say, you need someone like that in a team to stir things up a bit. And we'll talk about him later on, too, about, you know, how he reacted when he learned about his sister and the Vision's romance. But, you know, so basically, Billy, this is a convoluted origin. I'm going to go through it quickly. Okay, the Scarlet Witch, during the 1960s, she and Quicksilver were the mutant twins born of two Romani parents, both by the name of, obviously they were called, their surname was Maximoff. That's why Wanda and Pietro Maximoff are known by that name. And then they were adopted. Apparently this was what happened later on. They were revealed to be adopted by these folks. They weren't their biological children. And right. It seemed that they were given to these Romanis by the High Evolutionary, Billy. The mad geneticist that we love. You know, the High Evolutionary gave them to these Romanis to raise, and then their true parentage, you know, remained a mystery. And then around the mid-70s, it was revealed that the Wizard, Bob Frank, and his wife Madeline, who used to be known as Miss America, they were rumored to be the parents of Pietro and Wanda. So that puts another twist into it, right? Now this is all before the established, you know, story that we know where Magneto is, in fact, their parents, their parent. So then, you know, in, I think it was around the early 80s, right? Magneto reveals that he is, in fact, Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver's father. But then, Billy, most recently, I think within the last 10 years or so, I think it was in the series called Axis, the Axis crossover series, it was revealed that Pietro and Wanda are not related to Magneto. So this is a recent thing. They discovered that they're not even mutants. You know, they got their mutant superpowers. They're more like mutates because they got it from the High Evolutionary's experiments. And then it also, you know, actually reveals in that same timeline, you know, which is like in during that Axis storyline, that their parents, who were called Django and Maria Maximoff, they were actually biologically their aunt and uncle. So their real mother is confirmed to be Natalia Maximoff, and she was a witch as well, also known as the Scarlet Witch prior to Wanda. So that this is all new, Billy. This is all new Marvel stuff. And then, I mean, I didn't even read any of these things. This is just from researching it on comic book database. Yeah, man, I mean, this is almost as bad as the Vision's origin. And their father turns out to be a guy called, listen to this, Billy, the Scarlet Warlock. Scarlet Witch, Scarlet Warlock. So technically Wanda's Scarlet Witch 2. Anyway, very convoluted. I like the fact that the High Evolutionary has a hand in, you know, in their origins because, you know, the High Evolutionary has always been one of my favorite villains. Sometimes he plays a bit of a heroish role, but yeah, he's a god treating us as his personal ant farm. So yeah, I'm saying he's a villain. And then, you know, the Vision though, Billy, based off of Arcus, like I mentioned earlier, the Golden Age Vision, which was created by Simon and Kirby. And Roy came up with the Vision because he wanted to add a new member to the team. Because apparently Stan was always stealing Thor, Cap, and Iron Man away from him. Sometimes he couldn't use them, you know, in order to avoid continuity disorientation, you know, because everything was in continuity. What if Thor was in his own title somewhere off in space and then he had to appear in Avengers? It wouldn't make sense, right? The same month.
Right.
So sometimes they took them away from Roy, those three main Avengers. And so Roy wanted to come up with another character to add to the usual roster of Giant Man, and the Wasp and Black Panther at that time. Hercules was there for a while. And also the Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver, they were around at that time too. They'd left the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants fairly early on in the X-Men run and joined the Avengers. So Roy wanted to introduce a new character, but Stan Lee had some rules. He said no aliens And, you know, he wants an android. Stan wants an android. So Roy at first wanted to go with Arcus. He wanted to reintroduce Arcus from the Golden Age, you know, the Golden Age alien Vision, who comes from another dimension, who can sort of travel through this gaseous smoke, almost like, you know, something like the Shadow could do, or, you know, well, the Shadow couldn't travel through smoke, but, you know, he could cloud the minds of men to appear to do that, right, Billy? So Arcus was off the table. But Roy decided to keep the name of the Vision. And then, because Stan wanted an android, Roy came up with the Vision. And John Buscema obviously designed him, his look. So he's the co-creator, along with Roy, of the modern-day Vision. So now, Billy, I'm going to leave that as his origin, because you and I are going to talk about it more as we go through the show. Because in your issue, it's it's expressly mentioned, I mean, during some events that we're going to get to. So, Billy, I want you now to introduce the particular pick that you have for this week that we're going to be focusing on.
Okay, so what I picked was Avengers 160 from 1977. The issue is called The Trial. And it has, you know, Vision and Scarlet Witch predominantly figuring in this storyline. And then Wonder Man too, because, you know, he's kind of tangentially related to them, and then a relative of his as well. So yeah, we're going to be talking about that one. It's got a all-star cast of creators behind it, and it's a really good story. And like you said, it even dips back into a little bit of history with the Vision and Wonder Man as well. So that's one of the reasons I love it. Oh, and then the Black Panther's there too. I love it when the Black Panther is part of it.
Panther has to be in every lineup for me. As you know, those questions we normally get on Twitter, Billy, the ones that we field, what's your ideal Avengers lineup? Black Panther has always got to be in there for me. I love that character so much. And especially drawn by John Buscema. I mean, he drew the best Black Panther for me. But then later on, George Perez, when he got on to the... I mean, he did that issue we just discussed, you know, 147 and most of that run. George Perez had his first... well, breakthrough in comics, I would say, breakthrough job in comics was penciling the Avengers. Yeah. So obviously he did comic book work before that, but I mean, this was his claim to fame at that point in time. So, wow, I love the way he drew Black Panther and, you know, many other artists after that. Even a guy like George Tuska or Don Heck drew a damn fine Black Panther. His costume just lends itself to all kinds of artists. Gene Colan did him for a while, a couple of issues of Avengers. Damn. So, so Billy, now this issue, Avengers 160, you want me to go through the specs of this one?
Sure, yeah, fire away.
Okay, so obviously, this is from the 70s. Cover dated June 1977. This is a Avengers 160 now, folks. Cover done by George Perez, inked by Joe Sinnott. And then it was on sale on March the 15th, 1977, though, and it was 30 cents, page count 32, edited by Archie Goodwin. And then the title of the story is The Trial, which is a great title because we'll get to it. You know, the entire interior story is basically a long, drawn-out, but action-packed trial. Written by Jim Shooter, a much-hated and maligned figure. Rightfully so, in the annals of comic creatordom. And then, of course, penciled by the legendary George Perez, inked by Pablo Marcos. Wow, and we love Pablo's stuff from the black and white magazines from the 70s and from the color stuff he did, right, Billy? Lettered by Dennis Wall and colorist Roger Slifer from Omega Men fame later on. At DC, went to do Omega Men. So a great lineup of creators here. This issue you can find in, well, I read it in the, I don't have the original issue like you do, Billy. I had to read it in my Avengers Masterworks, which I started picking up, you know, in the mid-aughts. Yeah, I think 2006 or 2007, I started collecting the Avengers Masterworks. They're up to 20 by now. This is in Avengers Masterworks Volume 17.
Okay.
Oh, wait. Let me just double check my shelves here. Okay, no, sorry. This is Avengers Masterworks Volume 16. Yeah. So, So, Billy, great issue that you picked. I want you to give us the synopsis for this one. It probably won't be too long because it's a very straightforward plot, right?
Yeah. It's not overly complicated. It's something very straight and to the point, but it's very It's a very good story.
It's an eye-opener.
Overly complicated plot to tell a good story. It's something you don't need.
That's right.
Okay, so let's start it out here. As Wonder Man, Vision, Black Panther, Scarlet Witch, and Beast wave goodbye to the departing Avengers, which is Thor, Iron Man, Wasp, and I believe Yellowjacket at the time, and Captain America and the aged Whizzer.
Yes.
We see an ominous looking blade behind them. As the team heads back inside Avengers Mansion, Black Panther has an uneasy feeling about something. Beast hops off to his lab, but is almost immediately tossed back out by an unseen force right through the wall. The rest of the team rushes in and finds the Grim Reaper ready to kill. Wonder Man is stunned to see his brother like this. More on that later. But the Reaper quickly renders them all helpless. When the Avengers awaken, they're all chained together, and the Grim Reaper tells them that he's holding a trial to see who's his true brother and who will die as a result of his findings. He questions the Vision first, and we get a quick recap of his origin and some recent events. The Black Panther is the defender for the Vision, and he makes a fool of the Reaper. The Reaper then switches to questioning Wonder Man. At this point, Wonder Man reveals even he doesn't understand exactly what has been happening after his supposed death. The Grim Reaper then loses it and attacks the team. Wonder Man steps in and kicks the crap out of his brother, ending the farce. All right, buddy, so what'd you think of this one?
Yeah, dude, how can I not like this issue? Because it's near perfect for what it is, you know? It's a kidnapping, yeah. A mass kidnapping, and then a forced trial, and then a death sentence being, you know, levied at one of the members, and then a massive battle and an escape, you know, and then also some revelations along the way. So it's a great issue. I want to mention something, Billy. Like, John Buscema is my favorite Avengers artist, but, you know, George Pérez is a very close second. Just look at how he draws the Vision. Now, the Vision, very distinctive look, like yellow and green costume with a red face, yellow diamond on his head. But he's always drawn with these shadowy eyes. You almost never see his pupils. Sometimes Neil Adams used to draw him during the Kree-Skrull War. He drew him with these red, you know, shining pupils, these glowing red eyes, you know, in these dark, deep eye sockets. But usually the Vision is drawn with these black, dark, shadowy eyes, right? George Pérez does that so well. And it kind of makes the Vision look like he's always angry. Just like John Buscema did. But in John Buscema's day, the Vision was more contemplative, almost, if you know what I mean. But George Pérez draws him as this mean-looking dude, this mean-looking android who wants to take out the human race. Oh, touch wood there, right? Touch wood. So, you know, I love the way he draws the Vision. Now, the story itself, brilliant. This gives us a rundown on the Vision story, his origin, which hasn't changed much. So we can get into this now, Billy. I mean, originally the Vision and Ultron, they were sort of, they debuted at the same time. Ultron debuted a little bit earlier in Avengers 53, right? As an unnamed protagonist. But then in Avengers 54, he was named. And an enemy of the Avengers, Henry Pym, had created him during a bout of insanity. And then Ultron had gained sentience and wiped his memory and then disappeared because he wasn't, you know, ready to face the Avengers or take over the world yet. He needed a better body. So once he did construct a better body for himself, he went even further. He created the Vision with the sole purpose of destroying the Avengers, infiltrating and then destroying the Avengers. Now, what I like to call Vision's headache moment, which happened in Avengers 57, he had a massive headache while in the process of destroying the Avengers. And then he succumbed. And then when he woke up, the Avengers were clustered around him. And then Vision had a change of heart and said, oh, I was forced, compelled by my maker, Ultron, to destroy you. But I've since, you know, this headache has given me a change of heart. No, that didn't happen, but it looked like that was what happened, right, Billy?
Sorry.
So then, you know, they defeated Ultron for the first time and, you know, with the help of the Vision. It was a great two-issue storyline, Behold the Vision, and then it ended with Even an Android Can Cry, that famous scene of the Avengers accepting the Vision into their ranks after he had helped them defeat Ultron, and after Thor and Cap and Iron Man had tested him, run the gauntlet.
And they tried to beat him up.
Yeah, they tried to beat him up. And Cap was the first man. He just immediately said, okay, the only way to get the measure of a man is to fight him.
To attack him.
Yeah.
I mean, and holy moly. But, well, you know, that's the 1960s for you right there.
Testosterone all over the place. And then, you know, he didn't defeat them, I mean, but he proved his worth because he took on all three of them, you know. Cap couldn't touch him. Iron Man was like a puppet in the Vision's hands. And then Thor was the only one who could, you know, take him on man to man, or man to synthesoid man, or synthetic man. And, you know, he even gave Thor, well, he impressed Thor. You know, so, I mean, for those people who don't know, the Vision has a great power set, right, Billy? He's kind of like the Martian Manhunter from, from Justice League. But I would say he's more of a mixture between Red Tornado and the Martian Manhunter. But, you know, that's just because he's an android. But he's a synthesoid, so he's got artificial skin, blood vessels, organs, everything. Just more powerful than a human. Mm-hmm. But he's got density control, which is arguably his main power. He can make his body ephemeral or ethereal by lowering his density, right, Billy? And then he can increase his density and his weight to incalculable levels by apparently pulling molecules from the air and converting it into mass. And, you know, when he does increase his density, he becomes diamond hard, which makes him virtually invulnerable. And I would say the most powerful Avenger, one of the most powerful Avengers. And then, of course, he's got the powers of flight. He's got super strength, and he's got an analytical computer mind. Plus, he's got the I-beams, because he's solar powered. Apparently, he absorbs solar radiation through the ruby in his head. That's how Ultron gifted him with, and as a power source. So, you know, this is also sometimes his weakness, right, Billy? He's sometimes his solar energy can be absorbed or siphoned off. And another weakness he has is it takes some time, a few seconds, for him to shift from one state to the next, from super dense to super ethereal. And then during that interim, he's vulnerable. So, of course, he's not like completely unbeatable, which would make him a boring character. But he's kind of like Mr. Spock for me. I don't know how he's very logical, you know, like an android. He's kind of like Star Trek's Mr. Spock a little bit. What do you say?
Yeah, you're not wrong there. I think I do like how, you know, he's the juxtaposition of he's supposed to be like an emotionless robot, but he does show emotions. You know, I do like that about him, because if he didn't have that to him at all, it would be a very stiff, boring character, in my opinion. You know, I mean, it just wouldn't work long term.
Exactly.
It would almost work a villain for a short term villain, or just pop up once in a while. But for a long term hero, I really love that about his character. You know, and he's a robot, and like I said, even an android can cry, and he's pissed off, and then he's crying, and then he's, you know, this and that. So he's a complete character. How many things Roy Thomas created, this has got to be up there for one of his best.
Yeah, this is, for me personally, Roy's greatest creation is the Vision. I mean, it was for the longest time, Billy, based on the letter columns, based on the letters they received from the late 1960s to the early 1980s, the Vision was by far the most popular Avenger. That's why he featured prominently in so many storylines from that time for 11 years straight. And, you know, that's why it was also on the corner box. I mean, the corner box, later in the 80s, they went to the six Avengers or so in the corner box again. But people forget that from the early 1970s to the late 1970s, the Vision was the sole Avenger featured on the corner box art on the top left corner of every Avengers comic. Sometimes the art would alternate. Normally it was John Buscema drawing the Vision. He would stand with his arms folded, right, Billy? Or it would be just a shot of his face, or it would be him flying through a wall. You know which one I mean. Flying through a barrier with his, and, you know, it's just, he was the most popular Avenger for a very long while. And of course, the other Avengers were never consistently, I mean, the big three were never consistently part of the book. You know, Thor was off on his own sometime. They even comment on that sometime in the comics, like, how can you just come when we need you and drop in whenever there's a danger that suits you, you know, and stuff like that. And Captain America would be off on his own with a Falcon in the mid-70s, and Iron Man would be stuck with financial problems and his drinking problem later on. But, you know, the Vision was consistent for a while there, him and the Scarlet Witch, and, you know, and I love that about the title and especially about the character of the Vision. I read Avengers for the Vision and the odd appearance of Thor, but for me it was the Vision and the Scarlet Witch, his relationship and the Vision himself. And, you know, Billy, in this comic that you picked particularly, we get to the reason why the Vision's actually, well, I mean, it was revealed long before, but this one puts it into a nice perspective. It wraps it, it in a bit of a bow. The Vision has human emotions and human feelings simply because he was imprinted with someone's brain patterns by Ultron when he was created. Now, how would that happen? Who was that, Billy? Can you speak on that a bit?
Yeah, that was Simon Williams, you know, later on to be Wonder Man, who was, you know, when he first was a character, he was, you know, a bit of a criminal. So he's got some brain patterns from a guy that was, you know, a criminal there in the beginnings of his.
You know, yeah, origin. I mean, Simon Williams was a criminal, you're right. But he was sort of forced into it by, you know, the Executioner and the Enchantress and Baron Zemo. Because, as you might remember, in the early issues of Avengers, this is long before the debut of the Vision, Tony Stark caused the dissolution or, you know, the bankruptcy of Simon's company. Him and his brother Eric, well, Eric was never part of the company, you know, the company was left to Simon, the younger brother, Simon Williams, because Eric had gotten involved with the Magia, right, Billy? That Marvel crime family, which is like the Mafia, but they're like, you know, have folks like Silvermane and the Owl, and, you know, they're all over the Marvel universe. So yeah. Eric, who's the Grim Reaper in this comic, you know, he's the Grim Reaper. He got involved with the Magia, and then, you know, Simon, you know, the company was failing because of Tony Stark's, you know, patented technology competing with Simon's company. And he asked Eric for help. Eric couldn't, though, at that point in time. So then he turned to Baron Zemo and, you know, the Enchantress. And they ended up creating, well, making him an ionic Superman. He's very much like Superman, right, Belize?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, invulnerable, super strong. His body's suffused with ionic energy. But then he died. He died helping the Avengers. He turned on the Masters of Evil at the last moment there, right? And I can't remember exactly. I read that comic way back when. But he died. Yeah. I think Zemo killed him. And then after that, Ultron managed to copy his brain patterns. From the Avengers, I think they had his brain patterns on file or something from the Avengers database. Yeah, I mean, what was Hank Pym trying to do? Clone or Tony Stark even clone Simon Williams' new body? We don't know, but they had his brain patterns on file. Ultron used that on the Vision, thinking that that would obviously help him to foster some hatred towards the Avengers. Because after all, Ultron might have thought that Simon Williams did hate the Avengers because he was a villain at that point in time, right, Billy? So then, because of that, the Vision and Simon Williams, Wonder Man, as we would come to know him, they share the same brain patterns, and therefore they can be considered twins or brothers or clones of each other. At least, you know, mind clones, if there is such a thing. But Billy, that's not all. The Vision's origin is almost as confusing as Scarlet Witch's, because whose body does the Vision inhabit?
Well, it depends on who you ask. If you ask, you know, Roy Thomas or,
you know,
Spanglehart or Jim Shooter, they'll tell you one thing. And if you ask John Byrne, you get another thing. And if you ask, who was it, the turn of the century there, Kurt Busiek and everybody else involved
with Avengers Forever,
you'll get another answer.
I think let's just go with the standard Bronze Age.
I like the original.
Yeah, I me too. This is just basically the body of the original android Human Torch.
Jim Hammond.
Yeah, that's right. Now, the Human Torch had died during the Golden Age. He had been, or during, you know, the Atomic Age, I should say. And, you know, he had been resurrected, I think, by the Mad Thinker and then battled the Fantastic Four, where he met the new Human Torch, Johnny Storm. And then he had died again. And then after that, you know, Reed and them left him in a lab. He was captured. Well, he was, his body was taken by Ultron. And then Ultron kidnapped at one point in time the original creator of the Human Torch. Phineas Horton. And then, you know, after that, Ultron forced Phineas Horton to help him to create the Vision, you know, and that explains this bit of a storyline in the mid-70s, 1970s, where Vision was briefly afraid of water. Billy, I don't know if you can remember that. It was insane. Like, he would freeze up near bodies of water. And Vision thought he was going insane, and that also affected his relationship with the Scarlet Witch. So, yeah, so all of that kind of stuff. But that's how the Vision learned he was, in fact, he in fact met on a time jaunt. Or no, I think it was the Kang bringing dead, enemies or dead creatures from the Marvel Universe back, you know, within time or something. He had brought them back to, I think it was that Legion of the Unliving story, right? Then during that story, the Avengers fought, you know, some dead characters from the past, which is the Frankenstein monster and Midnight.
Zemo.
Baron Zemo. Midnight.
The original.
Yeah, the original Zemo. Midnight, the Shang-Chi villain, you know, had fought him in the very beginning. Yeah, and then obviously also the original Human Torch, Jim Hammond. So... Jim Hammond said at one point in time in that storyline, I remember he said, like, I recognize this body. This is my body. The Vision was like dying or something. So Jim helped repair him because, after all, he knows his own body, right? Better than Vision knows the body. So that's how the Vision first learned that. But, you know, like you say, everybody has their own idea nowadays, right, Billy? There's been like new information. I prefer this original Bronze Age origin. Vision was created by Ultron from the body of the original Human Torch with the brain patterns of Simon Williams. That's all you need to know.
Yep.
So, you know, Billy, now let's speak about this trial, man. It seems that the Grim Reaper, he just can't get over the fact that his brother has been cloned. Not even properly cloned. It's just the Vision has become his own man. And still, now Wonder Man's alive. You know, we know that now. Wonder Man has since come back to life. I think magically, wasn't it, Billy? Someone, it was like a voodoo. What was his name?
Black Talon.
Yes. I haven't read that in ages. Sorry, you're right. The Black Talon, this voodoo sorcerer. He was actually, in fact, wasn't he hired by the Grim Reaper or something?
Turns out he was the mastermind behind a couple of the plots leading up to this. Yeah,
that's right. He was hired, and then he, you know, resurrected Simon Williams. But he was very much like a zombie, you know, like a zuvembi,
right?
You know, and then eventually,
no, not that kind of
thing. not that bad. Oh man, this is where our horror chops really shine. You know, and then what happened was, you know, Simon just couldn't stand it. He couldn't. Oh no, I should say Eric, his older brother, the Grim Reaper. Now the Grim Reaper was changed into the Grim Reaper at the behest of the Magyar, right? But he had become this superpowered, almost like a half cyborg kind of, you know, not completely, but his scythe-like hand or his scythe-like appendage is incredibly powerful. You know, it can shoot rays of all kinds. It can cut through most metals. But apparently it can't cut through Wonder Man's ionic, you know, six-pack that he sports there at the end. But, you know, so he's a very powerful... He takes out all of these Avengers, right? Lickety-split. And chains them up with these specially designed manacles that, if they resist, these manacles would cause them tremendous agony. And they're
like a shock collar.
Yeah.
Those like the ones they have for animals.
Precisely. Those are nasty.
He has for them. Oh, that's just crazy. Yeah.
Dude, that's nasty. And you know, I like the fact that he, you know, after they're all rendered unconscious, they wake up and then they're all seated nicely around the Avengers assembly, you know, their meeting whole round table. And then, you know, he drafts T'Challa to be their lawyer. I mean, he's...
Which I love. I love that. Because like we said before, Black Panther is an awesome character because he's super smart. It's not like back in this day and age, like he's like, you know, a super smart guy now with like, you know, he can invent things and whatnot. Back then, he wasn't like Beast, I'm going to go to the lab and create things smart. He was just super intelligent in a way that he could think 2-3 steps ahead of everybody. So he makes a complete idiot out of, you know, the Grim Reaper here because the Grim Reaper thinks he has all the answers, but the Black Panther's way smarter than him.
Dude, he's like Batman. Black Panther has always been Batman for me. He's Batman with the fighting skills of Captain America. You know, that's what I like about Black Panther. And, you know, he does outthink the Grim Reaper here. He even argues like a lawyer at one point in time, and then he puts in some sarcasm there, right? Billy, where's that bit? Let me quickly find it here. Where, you know, they're chained up around the table. And then there's this bit where, oh man, I gotta laugh at this. Grim Reaper says, Black Panther, your witness. Just like in a real court. And Black Panther's being sarcastic. He says, Vision, please tell the court, you know, in air quotes, the reason you apparently agreed to help steal Captain America's body.
And then he said he did so because I saw Captain America himself hiding in the shadows, signaling me to play along until he could go into our trap, which I think that's a load of crap, but we'll talk about that later too.
Yeah. I've also got that in my greatest Vision moments. And then, you know, eventually, to make matters, you know, worse for old Eric here is he learns that his brother is not really his brother anymore because it seems that Simon Williams as this, you know, as Wonder Man has evolved, right, Billy? His ionic energy has completely suffused his human form, changing it into something other than human. Before he was just a man empowered by ionic energy. Now he has become ionic energy. And we see that with the classic, you know, I love these panels when I was a kid reading every Avengers comic where Wonder Man removes his glasses, those red glasses of his, and then you see his ionic eyes.
Glowing,
Whoa, I love those panels. I mean, and there's an excellent bit where he does that in this comic. He removes his glasses to show Eric he's not human anymore, you know. So in fact, Vision and Wonder Man have evolved beyond the original Simon Williams. So then, you know, Vision starts using his Spock-like logic to scold Eric Williams, the Grim Reaper here, and he doesn't like what he hears, so he activates the agony collar or the agony bands, right? The agony cuffs. And then all of the Avengers suffer, right?
And yeah, they all get blasted.
And then it seems that they in fact have no effect on Wonder Man because of his ionic energy. And Wonder Man just, this is probably one of the best George Perez punches, Billy, where he just slams, you know, with a roundhouse punch, he just punches old Eric across the room. Then there's this great fight between, you know, Wonder Man and, you know, the Grim Reaper. Now, this is something I always liked about George Perez. He's the only artist that I've seen. Maybe John Byrne has done that too, but I normally associate George Perez with that, where when a superhero is, when there's some distance between a super strong superhero and his enemy, then the superhero will just punch the nearest object at the enemy. Billy, have you ever seen that? I mean, in his New Teen Titans run, Wonder Girl did that all the time. Cyborg, all the time. You know, when Luke Cage joined the Fantastic Four, he did it. Well, the Thing does that all the time. And then these Avengers issues have that. The 1990s Avengers with Kurt Busiek had George Perez doing stuff like that. It's just treating things like baseball bats being punched, you know, at their enemies.
Oh, yeah.
But Billy, what do you think about this fight? This is a pretty good fight between Wonder Man.
It is, because you can tell Wonder Man, he wants to help him. He doesn't want to hurt him, but the Grim Reaper is just too stupid for his own good and keeps trying to hurt Simon and attack him and blast him. And then finally, you know, you mentioned that scythe he has. He can do all sorts of different things with it. He can make it into like, you know, almost like a saw blade.
Yeah.
And he tries to cut Wonder Man, and it just rips off the blade because he's kind of invulnerable there. Like he said, he's invulnerable.
Yeah.
And then, boom, knocks him right out.
Yeah, I mean, we must mention that Wonder Man, this iteration of Wonder Man, the classic Bronze Age Wonder Man, is arguably just as strong as Thor. I would say Thor's stronger because there was this one panel in one of the comics once when, I think that was when Ms. Marvel also joined the team, where she was trying out the Avengers gem, right, Billy? And Ms. Marvel attempted to lift these magnetic weights, and she couldn't lift it. And then, you know, Wonder Man came along and he says, yeah, you better not try to lift this, Carol, because it's set for Thor. And then he lifts it, but he struggles under the weight. And then yeah. Iron Man has to save his butt from the weight. So yeah, he's very powerful. I mean, arguably in Thor's league, but he's definitely not more powerful than Thor. I would only put the Hulk and Hercules in Thor's, you know, vicinity, you know.
Yeah, right there with him.
So this is an amazing battle, Billy, and it ends on a bit of a sad note because Wonder Man, after he punches out Eric, he just wants to be alone with his brother for a while. You know, contemplating what he has lost. He's lost his business, he's lost his family, he's lost his brother, he's lost his life. He's since become something inhuman. But, you know, look at the bright side, Simon, man. You gained a brother and a sister-in-law. You got the Vision as your bro. You know, because...
Yeah, and then later on, for one, trying to break them up, and oh, boy.
Oh, damn. Yeah, that's somewhat, you know, something I never really liked about Wonder Man is the fact that he sort of had a thing for Wanda later on, you know? Mm-hmm. In the beginning, Hawkeye had a thing for Wanda, you remember?
Oh, yeah.
But then he had a thing for everybody.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, he treated the ladies from the Avengers, from the Defenders abysmally, too. Remember Hawkeye? And tried to, you know, get into Wanda there and then, you know, tried to sort of, I wouldn't say, I mean, but he was very upfront about it. He wasn't giving her a choice in the matter. He would like frequently corner her in Avengers Mansion and just say, hey, give me a kiss or something. It's like harassment, right, Billy? On the
creep.
The creep, yeah, of the highest level. And then, you know, but then she just, one day she just told him, I love the Vision.
Well, yeah. Back then it was not uncommon for the male characters to just like walk up and kiss the female characters or smack them on the bum or whatever. That was not uncommon back then.
From the Stan Lee era. Yeah.
But you know, I forgot to mention another good one-liner when Grim Reaper and Black Panther are, you know, the two quote-unquote lawyers are jousting with each other. And Black Panther informs Reaper that Vision has taken a wife, and Grim Reaper goes, no, my brother would never marry a stinking mutant. And Black Panther, oh, so you're a bigot as well as a fool. I have no more questions for the Vision.
and then dude, don't forget the Grim Reaper says, I'll overlook your insult this once, or something like that, right? I'll ignore your insult. Yeah, Panther. Oh my goodness. And he calls himself the Inquisitor, which sort of,
what is this,
the Spanish Inquisition? Jeez. I mean, makes sense because Scarlet Witch is a witch.
Mm-hmm. Look out.
Dude, this is a great issue. I love it. Even the flashback scenes are gold. It flashes back to so many classic storylines, you know, Ultron creating the Vision, the original Human Torch, the first meeting of the Vision and the Grim Reaper, where the Grim Reaper first wanted to transfer the Vision's brain into the dead body of his brother, Simon Williams. Remember that storyline? They have the part with the Space Phantom and Grim Reaper teaming up to kill Captain America and get the Vision to transfer into Cap's body. And then, you know, they have the flashback where the Vision saves the life of the Grim Reaper and then the marriage of Wanda and then the Vision. They've even got the Wonder Man has his own flashback sequence of, you know, chronicling his origins. And it's amazing. It's just terrific. Great issue, Billy. Again, you picked a winner. I'm not going to have a lot of, you know, Mighty Marvel missteps here. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we'll get to that later. So, Billy, for my segment, I'm going to be doing something different. Like I said earlier, I couldn't pick my favorite Vision issue. I'm still vacillating between a couple of issues. I don't really know what is my favorite Vision issue. I think possibly the best Vision series, if you want to go for a storyline, would probably be Tom King's Vision, 12, you know, issue limited series of the Vision in recent years. I think it debuted in 2015. That is a great Vision story, but that's sort of Watchmen-esque level storytelling, which is it's trying to completely revision. No, it's trying to give a revision of the character.
Revisionist history.
Yeah, revisionist history. Oh, one of my favorite podcasts. But, you know, no, it's trying to sort of provide a new take on the Vision. And I love that. I love that story. I have that in a hardcover, and I've reread it countless times. It's great. But when I think about the Vision, I think about the Bronze Age, and I think about the Avengers, and there are so many great Vision stories. I can't happen upon a single one. So this was a bit of a tall order for me. So listeners, what I've decided to do is I'm going to go through my favorite Vision moments of the Bronze Age. Now, it's not going to be – there are many, but I've just picked my top favorites, like 10 favorites, right, Billy? And I'm going to let you chime in as I go through them. Okay, let me get this ready here. All right. Okay, Billy, so are you ready, man? Okay, we'll start at the very beginning. You might remember, obviously, we spoke earlier about Avengers number 57 and 58, which was great. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to go into that again. Behold the Vision.
Love it.
That's just classic. Great John Buscema art. Fantastic writing by Roy Thomas. Vision gets a headache, beats up all of the Avengers, and then gets a headache, and then turns to their side.
Yep.
And then goes back to Ultron's lair, you know, soundly defeats him with the powers given to the Vision by Ultron. Man, talk about, you know, a massive mistake on Ultron's part, right? He tried to destroy the Avengers, but inadvertently created the strongest Avenger in the process, right, Billy? Mm-hmm. So, Billy, then we get to my next favorite. As you might remember, the Avengers number 71... That was where Vision, that was during the Grandmaster Kang debacle, where the Grandmaster and Kang had this bet, you know, they were going to throw heroes against each other for the fate of the world. And then the Grandmaster ended up picking the Squadron Sinister, the evil Squadron Supreme members, which is how the Avengers first encountered them. And, you know, they had to duke it out with half of the Avengers. But the other half, which included the Vision and Yellowjacket and the Black Panther, they were sent back in time to the 1940s, to Paris, where they had to fight the invaders. Right, Billy, you remember that? They had to deal with Namor. They had to deal with Cap and the original Human Torch. So now at this point in time, Vision did not know the Human Torch was his, you know, he inhabited the Human Torch's body. So, but this is strange because this is the Vision's first meeting, right, with the Human Torch.
Yeah.
And Billy, in that issue, as you might recall, the Vision defeats all three of the invaders by flying through their bodies and molecularly disrupting their atoms, which is one of the greatest moves that the Vision has in his repertoire, right? Mm-hmm. So, Billy, that's a great Vision moment right there. And then you also get to see the Vision and Yellowjacket and Black Panther fighting Nazis in Paris, because Paris was occupied at that time, right, during the German occupation in World War II. Vision, there's this panel of him blasting away at some Nazis with his eye beams. Panthers, you know, savating the hell out of them.
Kicking the crap.
Oh, I love that issue. And that, you know, that's one of my favorite Vision moments. I recall that fondly. And then, Billy, another one's from Avengers number 77. I don't know if you recall this wacky storyline. Tony Stark had financial troubles. So he turns up at the Avengers mansion. He says, guys, this guy Cornelius Van Lunt, this businessman, he's moving in on Stark Industries. Billy, do you remember this?
I don't know that I've read that one. Keep going. I remember.
Dude, this is insane. Listen to this. So Tony Stark, you know, his business is in trouble. So he goes to the Avengers in Avengers Mansion and he says, listen, guys, I'm going to have to ask you for the back rent on the Avengers Mansion. So it gets crazier, dude. It gets crazier. Now, this team of the Avengers is Yellowjacket, Wasp, The Vision, Black Panther, Giant Man, who was Hawkeye at this time. You might remember Yellowjacket had, you know, briefly gifted Hawkeye with the, you know, the Pym particles to make him Giant Man. Yeah. So this one was when Hawkeye wasn't a Hawkeye. Quicksilver was part of the team. Scarlet Witch was part of the team too. So they joined, you know, they had to get up the cash, together, you know, to pay Tony Stark back for the back rent of the Avengers Mansion. So they ended up working as demolition workers for the very selfsame Cornelius Van Lunt. They rented them out. I mean, Wanda and Pietro even appeared on a TV show, for God's sake, advertising the services of the Avengers. And then, you know, they got this construction job or this deconstruction job where they worked for Cornelius Van Lunt. Now, listen, Billy, the Vision, probably the greatest construction worker of all time, or the greatest, you know, battering, what would you call it, the sledgehammer. What's that giant? Yeah, what's that giant ball and chain that they used to? Is that a wrecking ball? Oh, what am I talking about? The wrecking crew, wrecking ball, of course. So, you know, Vision, he flies above every building that they want demolished, right? This Cornelius Van Lunt, and he just like increases his weight and his mass, you know, increases his mass and his density, I should say. And he plummets into the building, plummets through floor after floor after floor until the whole structure collapses. So they get like, they get lots of cash. You know, they become these construction workers. And then eventually they take down Van Lunt, who's this seedy businessman. But not after the Vision first. I mean, the Scarlet Witch now, this is early days. The Vision has, I think the first time the Scarlet Witch and the Vision met was during this Archon, the Magnificent arc. Right, Billy? Do you remember that?
Yep.
Archon's world of Polmacus in that other dimension was dying. Archon's this like Thor-like Zeus character with these magical thunderbolts and super strength. And, you know, he showed up because his world was dying and he needed, you know, this atom sphere. But he also ended up liking the Scarlet Witch and kidnapped her, right? So,
of course.
Yeah. I mean, Scarlet Witch, this happens to her all the time. These guys just fall in love with her. Even Toad, right, from the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants
Like, I don't blame them. She's a beautiful, powerful woman here, but, like, come on.
Yeah, dude, this is taking it a little bit far. But, you know, I'd take Scarlet Witch over Mantis and Moondragon any day.
Well, yeah. Yeah, Mantis, I'd be afraid... I'd be afraid both of them would kick the crap out of me because of their martial arts skills. And then Moondragon, she'd, you know, take over your mind and make you just peel her grapes and feed them all day.
Massage her toes.
This one is hungry. This one wants to have lunch. She'd be like, right, I'm out.
That would drive me nuts. Oh, I'd go crazy.
The cover for that issue, by the way, I have it in the Essentials. I don't have the single issue, but I have it in the Essentials. It's the Avengers for Hire. And it has that seedy businessman on the front cover, and he has a handful of money, and he's waving it, and he goes, "Work, fools, work. You've confirmed my opinion of human nature. Just like anyone else, the Avengers can be bought."
Oh, it's ridiculous. Oh, and he looks like such a seedy, you know, bad guy, too.
Like a guy that owns a shady carnival or something.
He looks like Charles Bronson playing Richard Branson. You know, I don't know. It's just, he looks like a carnival barker, too, with that waistcoat of his, a little bit of a golden chain pocket watch. Yeah, man, it's crazy. And, you know, then, Billy, that issue, it's amazing. But then the subsequent, I think, three issues later, they're, you know, they meet Red Wolf. Do you remember the character Red Wolf?
Oh, yeah.
And the Vision sort of meets him, because the Vision briefly leaves the Avengers for literally just one issue. And then the very next issue, because apparently they got lots of letters from fans saying, "No, don't let him leave the Avengers." The reason he left was because he realized he's not human, and you know, he has no place among the Avengers. It's a sob story, but he ends up leaving. And then while he's walking through New York, he encounters Red Wolf, who needs his help. So after beating up Red Wolf, or stopping Red Wolf from killing some henchman of Van Lunt's, because apparently Van Lunt caused the death of his family. Vision, you know, brings an unconscious Red Wolf, and all the while he's walking with the Red Wolf that he knocked out over his shoulder, Red Wolf's Red Wolf, which is his pet wolf, keeps like biting the Vision in the thigh. And the Vision keeps saying to the dog, "This will serve you, you know, a little, since I'm diamond hard." You know, so it's ridiculous. And, you know, they go back to Avengers Mansion, and some of the Avengers even says, "Vision, we thought you quit." He says, "No, I'm back. Someone needs our help." So they end up, some of the Avengers volunteer to do that, but some, you know, the big three and some of the other Avengers, they go off in a different direction. They've got a different set of priorities. But the Vision and Scarlet Witch and Giant Man, they tag along with Red Wolf to discover what Cornelius Van Lan's up to. Now, Billy, at one point in time, the Quinjet is flying, also a great creation of Roy's, right, the Quinjet. Mm-hmm. That's another thing he added to the Avengers, his own creation. It flies through the sky and then it's attacked by a vessel manned by robots. Now this is where the Vision is supremely, you know, this is the great use of his powers, Billy. The Vision, as they're attacked, the Quinjet, by this robotic controlled spaceship or whatever, the Vision becomes ethereal. He leaves the Avengers Quinjet, which has since going to crash, right? And then he enters the attacking vessel. And then when he sees that the Avengers vessel, the Quinjet, is crashing, he becomes so enraged that he becomes super heavy. And because of his weight, that crashes the attacking vessel in turn. And then the Vision just rises from the wreckage, ethereal like a ghost. And luckily, it turns out that the Avengers have managed to bail out. Wanda's kidnapped, and then it's basically Giant Man versus the Vision. And Vision, all I can say is he gets the best of that fight. Giant Man punches him, but he's diamond hard, and he like breaks his knuckles. Oh, it's glorious. It's really glorious. And then, Billy, there's this issue, another great Vision moment. I think it's in Avengers 92, where, you know, Thor and Cap, and on the cover, Thor, Cap, and Iron Man, they're dismissing the Vision, Giant Man, and Wanda and Pietro because they disgrace the Avengers, you know. So it's one of those Silver Age covers, right? Which we're so used to seeing over at DC. But, you know, Wanda and the Vision, they have since... I mean, there's this issue. I think it was issue 91 where it featured this forbidden kiss between Wanda and the Vision. This is the first time they showed feelings for each other. I mean, prior to this, the Vision or Wanda has been interested in the Vision because she keeps thinking in thought bubbles supplied by Roy. Roy's so good at that. She keeps thinking, you know, he does have emotions. He is like a human being. You know, that's what she keeps thinking. But when they're kidnapped, they end up being kidnapped by Ronan along with Captain Marvel. You know, the Kree warrior, Captain Marvel. They end up being captured by Ronan the Accuser and one of his Kree sentries. And then while the Vision and the Scarlet Witch is chained up by these energy manacles, you know, they're going to die. Ronan's like gloating over them. And then, you know, they lean towards each other. They almost kiss, right, Billy? Do you remember that issue?
Mm-hmm.
It's called the Forbidden Kiss issue, right? Now, okay, so there was already something, but they get interrupted. So then, one issue later, Billy, just one issue later, there's already something between the Vision and Scarlet Witch now. One issue later, in issue 92, the very first page, Scarlet Witch is asking, hey, who would like to go for a stroll through the park with me? And of course, you know, this is the Vision's cue, but this is how little game he has, right? Quicksilver says, no thanks, I'm, you know, cooling my heels this summer's day. How about you, Vision? Now, Vision has the opportunity to hang out with this goddess in the park for a romantic stroll. Mm-hmm. He's sitting at his chessboard wearing a sweater, and he says, I think not. This unusual variant of the English opening has aroused my curiosity. He's blowing Wanda off for chess. How Spock-like could you get?
Yeah, it's not even like he's playing someone else in chess that he's having a tough time beating. He's just looking at the chessboard himself.
God damn it, dude. This is like how Uhura felt on the original Star Trek every time Spock blew her off. Now you're in that starship seat, Wanda.
or Nurse Chapel. Yeah, she was always after Spock.
Oh, yeah. True. Mm-hmm. So, Billy, then another great issue is 93 where it's... Journey to the Center of the Android. That's where the start, basically in the beginning of the Kree-Skrull War saga, right? The Kree-Skrull War, the classic Avengers storyline, probably one of the best Avengers storylines. A Journey to the Center of the Android, obviously, you know, based off of the Fantastic Voyage, right? That movie or that story where, you know, these miniature anatomists head into this human body. Now, Ant-Man has to do that because the Vision has been damaged. He has to explore the Vision's innards, and he's surprised by what he finds. I was also surprised, and I've heard it said even Roy was surprised because he gave this to Neil Adams to draw, right, Billy? And mm-hmm. Roy wanted a much more human-looking, interior to the Vision's body. He didn't want this robotic-looking, because after all, Vision was a synthesoid. He was a synthetic human. But, you know, the way Neil Adams drew it, that the Vision had mechanical parts. And yeah. That became canon for a while there, right? And that's also mm-hmm. what I think that's issue. The issue is where Hawkeye sort of no. It's in 102, Billy. Sorry, I'm on 102 now. But mm-hmm. first, I want to mention issue 96. Billy, do you remember like part of the Kree-Skrull War? You said the Vision had human emotions. You know, he could love, he could feel for the Scarlet Witch. But in this, he shows rage. He almost beats a Skrull warrior to death. Do you remember that issue?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's even on the cover, right? Avengers 96, the Andromeda Swarm. Mm-hmm. And, Vision's like beating the Skrull warrior to death just to get some information out of him. And, you know, then in Avengers 102, there's this scene where he meets the Grim Reaper for the first time. And the Grim Reaper wants to transfer him into Simon Williams' corpse. And that's where Hawkeye sort of moves in on Scarlet Witch, and that's where she says she loves the Vision. But the Vision doesn't hear that. What he saw, you know, very soap opera-like, he just saw them kissing, and then he walked away. So that sort of fuels the drama there. And then the Scarlet Witch approaches him, and then he says, you know, he cannot feel love. And then, you know, she cries, and they leave, right? So a very, very sad bit. But, you know, eventually they do get together, right? I think it's in 108 issue, Avengers 108, where they finally sort of, the Vision admits he has feelings for her. And I think it happens again after, that was the one with the Space Phantom and the Grim Reaper and Captain America, where the Vision, they almost ended up dying, and he almost ended up losing Wanda. That's why he professed that he does have feelings for her. And Thor, Thor being, man, this was a great Thor moment. Vision and Scarlet Witch, they're hugging, you know, and she's crying. And Thor says, my friends, let us leave these two alone. Though in truth, they be alone no more. Man, that was a good line. And then there's this one issue, Billy, where Vision, I think it's 113, he gets almost killed by a suicide bomber, a kid with a suicide bomb on his head, the suicide bomb helmet. And that's also then Wanda goes nuts. You know, that's how you see her true feelings for the Vision, because, you know, she almost lost him. Luckily, they repair him. And then, you know, a couple of issues later, Wanda, now we're getting more into the Wanda line of things, because after all, this is not just all about the Vision, right, Billy? It's also about the Scarlet Witch. I'd say arguably one of the most important things other than meeting the Vision in the pages of the Avengers is Wanda meeting Agatha Harkness. This is after the wedding of Crystal and Pietro, you know, a Quicksilver married Crystal from the Inhumans, right, Billy? Now, the Fantastic Four's nanny, Franklin's nanny, right, of the Fantastic Four was Agatha Harkness, this witch woman from Salem. Very powerful. She meets Wanda during the wedding, and then she offers to educate Wanda in the mystical arts at the end of that. I think it happened in Avengers 128. And then they also meet Necrodamus from The Defenders. Do you remember, Billy? That little hunchbacked Asian-looking dude who's actually a beast. It's a heavily muscled old Asian man underneath that robe. Oh, man, he's a great villain. We got to talk about him on The Defenders when we get to them. And, Billy, that self-same issue features Mantis breaking the swordsman's heart. You know, and she, like you say, she's got the hots for the Vision. And the Vision's lonely because Wanda's off doing her magic coaching with Agatha Harkness. And, while the swordsman is having a hissy fit because Mantis has broken his heart. I mean, Thor and Iron Man even have to restrain him, you know, from running after her. You know, he's got no dignity left. Mantis just ignores him and walks into the Vision's room where he sits brooding. And she says, "May this one enter." She's going to seduce the Vision. God damn.
And then he's just like oblivious to it.
Yeah. And then, in fact, Billy, he did have feelings for her, for Mantis, for a while there, because he even lamented the fact to Tony Stark at one point in time. He says he loves Wanda, and he even blew off Mantis. He said he loves Wanda. There can never be anything between Mantis and him. But then when Mantis is going to leave, the Vision becomes upset, right? And he speaks to Tony Stark about it at one point in time. And then, obviously, Billy, there's the big reveal in issue 135 where we learn that the Vision is, in fact, inhabiting the body of the original Human Torch. And that's where we learned how, you know, the original body was kidnapped. And then, Billy, the last thing I want to mention is Giant Size Avengers number 4 featuring the double wedding of the Vision and the Scarlet Witch. And this doesn't matter at all, folks. The sword, the ghost of the swordsman and Mantis. Well, he's kind of a ghost. He's not really a ghost, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, that was really crazy.
And Billy, do you remember who officiated the wedding? Do you remember?
Oh, yeah, it was not Kang, Immortus.
Yes!
And then, again, for some bizarre reason, didn't Dormammu show up in that issue?
Yeah, dude, yes, you're right. Yeah, with he's even on the cover.
Yeah.
Yeah, Umar and Dormammu, they were in that issue, too. That was wacky issue, dude. So those are some of my favorite Vision moments from the Bronze Age. Now, we haven't even gotten to later storylines. Later storylines would feature a couple of good issues in Marvel Team-Up, which I want to talk about in our part 2, which is not going to drop anytime soon, folks. It's probably going to be in a couple of months, but we have to do a part 2 about this, Billy. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because there are some key issues in the Vision and Scarlet Witch miniseries from 1985 to 86, right, Billy? I think it was. They had a 12-issue miniseries, which features the creation of their children. There were some good issues in that. But, you know, I love the appearances of Spider-Man with the Scarlet Witch and Spider-Man with the Vision in the early Bronze Age. You know, they had some great, and they also fought Necrodamus in a couple of those ones. Those ones are great. We got to talk about them. But sure. That's basically, Billy, a rundown of all the best moments. Now, I want to ask you, Billy, now that I've gone through all my favorite moments, what are some of your favorite Vision moments? Of course, it can be among the ones that I picked, but you must have some that you fondly recall.
Well, yeah, for me, definitely my top is his, you know, first appearance there. Like you said, those two issues by Roy Thomas and John Buscema with Ultron. I love those two. Those are easily, it's not even close. Those are my favorites. And then I do really enjoy, you didn't talk about it. You just mentioned the 12-issue limited series, but there was a 4-issue one.
Oh, yes.
A couple years before that one. And I do like that one quite a bit, too. It's a little bit, you know, more of a horror bent to it. But then there's, you know, a couple of tiny moments of humor with the Vision, which, like I said before, is funny, too, because, you know, he's supposed to be this robot without emotions. But then, he, you know, he cracks a joke, you know, here and there. So I enjoy that 4-issue miniseries as well quite a bit.
Yeah, no, dude, so many great moments. And I agree with those, the ones you mentioned. You can't go wrong with the first ever appearance, Behold the Vision. I mean, it features one of the greatest Avengers covers. You know, the John Buscema cover, all in red, with the Vision, you know, appearing from the smoke, sort of hearkening back to his name, original namesake, Arcus, you know, which he always appeared in this puff of smoke. The Vision appearing in this red puff of smoke, standing giant-like over the Avengers, you know, cringing beneath him almost, you know, in fear. What a great cover by Buscema. And then one of the greatest panels in 58 with, you know, even an android can cry. At the very end there. Now, don't let me hear you say, I mean, I'm talking to listeners or whoever is, you know, listening to us, even if they're not regular listeners, but even our regular listeners, don't let me say the Vision's a crybaby. That this dude has never had a life. He's never, you know, he's completely alone. He's completely unique. And then when he's accepted by the Avengers, that's one of the biggest moments. So no shit, he's crying. Right, Billy?
Yeah.
Tears of joy. Mm-hmm. And then after that, he almost never cries again. Then it's just Wanda crying a lot.
Yeah.
But, you know, Billy, Wanda is also, you know, for me, a great character. It's just she goes hand in hand with the Vision for me. I mean, I liked her as a villain, you know, in the early X-Men issues. You know, when I never read them. I never picked them up in the Essentials. I picked them up in the Masterworks when they came out. And I liked the fact that she was like a reluctant mutant bad guy. You know, she was she didn't want to be part of the Brotherhood. Magneto was constantly abusing her, verbally abusing her, forcing her and her brother in, but her brother was also coaxing her to do these horrible things to humanity. And then eventually they joined the Avengers. So, you know, she is a great character. It's just, I'm not, I mean, if I think about great, you know, female characters, she's not one of my all-time favorites. You know, I'm more like a She-Hulk fan. I love Tigra, Greer Nelson. I love Hellcat. I love Valkyrie. Valkyrie's one of my all-time favorites. Brunhilde.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, but Scarlet Witch, she's definitely in my top 10. You know, I'd say I'd like her more than Carol Danvers even. Although, you know, the greatest female heroes for me would always be from the X-Men. You know, I'm like a massive Storm fan. Rogue, Jean Grey, later on Psylocke, you know, all of those. I love the X-Women. And she's technically an X-Women. You know, she's a part of the X-Women. She's a mutant.
Yeah.
But, you know, as modern origins stand, she's a, you know, mutant gifted her powers by the High Evolutionary. So she's like a mutate. Or what would you call those? You know, you remember the High Evolutionary had these... animal
new men,
yeah, but they were more animal-like, but he did at one point in time also create like superhumans, so yeah, they were like the new men. Yeah,
he's done a lot of crazy crap.
Oh man, I mean, he's got a big hand in in Adam Warlock, and you and I still have to talk about that down the line. You know, he's Counter-Earth, and there's this Fantastic Four issue where it's him fighting Galactus for the fate of Counter-Earth. Oh, there's so many great, you know, issues featuring the High Evolutionary. So, Billy, man, I think that wraps it up for our main segment. We're not going to have a break between this and Bronze Age Brilliance. We're just going to head right into Bronze Age Brilliance, specifically focusing on your pick, which is 160. And I'll let you start us off with that. What was your favorite moment, your Bronze Age Brilliance from the issue you picked?
Well, for me, it's just definitely the interactions between the Reaper and Wonder Man at the end there. I really love that, because you can tell, you know, the Reaper is just totally unhinged. He's coming from a good place that he's... I shouldn't say he's coming from a good place. He's coming from a place where he's just basically had this mental breakdown because of everything that's happened to him in his life and happened to his brother, who he cared for a lot. And then there's his brother who's trying to tell him, you know, to, you know, knock off... trying to help him knock off the deep end, and he just can't help himself. And then, you know, he reluctantly... you know, KOs them there, but I really love the relationship and the dialogue between them in this this book. It's, I mean, the Black Panther stuff is funny too, with the whole, like, I'm a lawyer and you're a lawyer. The banter back and forth is funny, but yeah, these guys, Wonder Man and you know, the Grim Reaper there. Shooter did a good job there, really good job.
Oh,
with
yeah.
The banter.
He did, you know, Jim Shooter's, he's a good writer. I just don't like the man, but I like, you know, a lot of the stuff he did. Of course, there's the whole New Universe debacle, you know, from the late 80s. But, you know, Shooter, he did leave some kind of imprint, you know, on comics. And some of it's bad, some of it's good. You know, but I'm not gonna knock on the guy too hard. I mean, he was a bastard when it came to editorial. But he had some writing chops, right, Billy? Even way back when he was a kid writing Legion of Superheroes in the Silver Age.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't get away with that without some talent. He created some of my favorite Legion of Superheroes characters. You know, Karate Kid, Princess Projectra, Nemesis Kid, and, of course, Pharaoh Lad. So I can't really fault the guy too much, you know. But, of course, there are, you know, reprehensible things he's done. But this issue is definitely one of his highlights, I'd say. The Trial. What a great name, too.
Yeah, I really like his early Avengers stuff. Like you said, with that one mention of the insane issue 200, which he had a part in.
Oh,
that gets crazy.
Dude, that's so crazy.
Earlier on, he had some really good Avengers issues. And then he popped in here and there for other titles as well. You know, sometimes just like an issue or two fill in. But it's good stuff.
That's right. Now, Billy, you know, let me get to mine. I think my favorite part was the Black Panther. And his unending sarcasm and his insults levied at this fake Inquisitor, you know, but still playing the role and using his wit.
He'd be a good lawyer, Black Panther.
He'd be a great lawyer. I would have suspected the Beast to take more of a hand, but the Beast was, you know, he was being used as he was thrown around like a rag doll in this issue. I mean, at one point in time, he goes to clean his lab, you know, and Grim Reaper blasts him out of his lab, and then Wonder Man catches him, and Wonder Man says he's unconscious and his fur is singed. Oh, poor Beast. I would have expected him to be a good lawyer, you know, using his intelligence. But nope, the Black Panther did the best job he could, and he was the man for the job, I should say. And then, Billy, what about your, if any, Mighty Marvel missteps?
The only thing I was a little bit like, oh boy, is, you know, the convenience of the issue starting out with the most powerful and members of the team just conveniently leaving so then he could get away with this. Because let's think about it. If, you know, Iron Man, Thor, and Cap, you know, Wasp and Yellow Jacket, if they don't all leave, there's no way this works, because there's no way Grim Reaper's going to stop all of them.
And yet, come on. And yet he was waiting there, knowing full well that the whole team might walk into the lab and he would still act the same way. So he's batshit insane, completely insane. He would have still attempted what he attempted. But you're right, Billy, it's very convenient that they leave so that we can, in fact, get to that trial. Yeah, but what was he planning to do? Take out Thor with one of those blasts? No way.
Yeah, good luck.
I mean, he took out Wonder Man with the blast, but that was just dumb luck, if you think about it, because later on in the fight, when Wonder Man really lets loose after he escapes from the manacles at the end, the Grim Reaper could do nothing. He could do nothing against Wonder Man. I mean, he could briefly disrupt the Vision's phasing abilities, you know, his density control with whatever frequency he has in his scythe, but... you know, he couldn't take out Wonder Man. So, you know, there's no way Thor and Cap and Iron Man and, you know, Wasp and Yellow Jacket wouldn't have been able to make short work of him. So, Billy, good point there. Good point. For me, it was the fact that it wasn't that so much as the fact that, you know, it's been happening too often in the Avengers comics that, you know, they're separating the team. And then, you know, the team that is left is still extremely powerful, but they're taken out in a few seconds by one opponent. Believe this is not the first time it's happened. It's happened countless times before this issue. Do you remember?
Yeah.
I mean, one time it happened with the Space Phantom, yes. And then another time it happened with Power Man, you know, not Luke Cage Power Man, the Masters of Evil Power Man. And he was with someone else. I can't remember. And they just took out this team that are clearly more powerful than them. Okay, so a lot is to be said for the element of surprise, you know, Billy. But damn, this was a direct confrontation. And he still managed to take out five and two of the most powerful Avengers, you know, being Wonder Man and the Vision. He takes them out.
Mm-hmm.
It makes no sense, you know, so... even if the most powerful team members leave, this still was a little bit weird for me. And normally the Grim Reaper would have help, but this time he acted alone. I think because even anybody who he drafted to his cause would have eventually said, dude, all this for your brother who's now, you know, what, both? You've got two brothers, you want to kill one? No, I'm out of here. This is too crazy for me. I'm leaving.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. That could be a misstep too, right, Billy? The fact that Eric Williams, I mean, he's obviously insane, so that sort of justifies his actions. But, you know, the fact that he just doesn't like that the Vision is a copy of his brother and one of them has to die. But he's not even sure which one now, because it could also be the Wonder Man, Simon Williams not being his actual brother. So he has to go through this whole trial. You know, this is insanity. This is just his mind cracking. So that I can accept that. But, you know, I don't accept the fact that, you know, he has to do this whole convoluted bit, you know, where he like plans to have this this forced trial. But, you know, it's great. This is comics and that's why we love it, right, Billy? So I'm not even going to say this is a misstep. This is what I love about guys like, you know, Engelhart and Roy Thomas and even Jim Shooter. Is in the 80s and late 70s and 80s, it became crazy like this. So, worth a read for us who like these, you know, weird kind of storylines. But, you know, with that, Billy, we'll give the listeners a bit of a break. After the Dormammu segment, we'll be back with some recommendations of Ragador. So stay tuned, listeners. Don't go away.
Greetings, puny mortal. mortals. 'Tis I, the dread Dormammu, ready to once again sanction the recommendations of my old friend Rags and deliver them to your unworthy ears. I'll be brief, since I'd rather be watching Netflix these days instead of dealing with you Terran scum. That's right, the Dark Dimension knows how to chill. Though I'll probably have to subscribe to Disney Plus 2 one of these days. After all, there remains the slight, hopeful possibility that I will appear in one of their upcoming shows. And this time, there will be no bargain. Stephen Strange will feel my unbridled wrath, along with the rest of the insignificant specks of matter. So until we meet again, I bid you good night and pleasant screams.
Alright, we're back with our recommendations of Ragador. Billy, what do you have on the slate this week?
Alright, so I think I'm going to try to give credit here. I think I was alerted to a sale on a website, and I cannot remember which one, by our good pal Doug, Bronze Age Babies, on Twitter,
right,
about a website running a sale on some trades. And I'm mostly a single issue guy when it comes to, you know, the longer runs and the certain writers and titles that I really love. But of course, we want, you know, you and I both and a lot of our friends, you know, we want to own like a ton of different material, and it's hard to get all of it in single issues, and especially when it's very old material. And I was jumping all over this trade because I think it's a $40 hardcover, and I think I got it for $10 or $15 maybe.
Yeah.
It's called Outer Limits, the Steve Ditko Archives Volume 6.
Yes. And it is,
oh yeah, it's just chocked full of crazy like 1950s, I believe Charlton sci-fi stories by Ditko. It's great. It's crazy. Some of them are, go ahead.
It's glorious. No, just give me a second. I got to take mine off the shelf here. Sorry, I forgot to do that. You did let me know about this pick. I just forgot to take it off the shelf. Okay, I got it here. Okay, Billy, sorry, continue. This is an amazing tome.
This is what the back cover says. In Outer Limits, Steve Ditko rockets into the vast outer reaches of the universe with comics such as Moon Snatchers, Automata Ultima, and The Time Chamber. These stories tap into middle Americans' fears and aspirations during the 1950s Cold War era and the beginning of the space race with Soviet Russia. And I mean, it's just, it's a beautiful hardcover. It's like, a regular size, like, comic, honestly. It's not like an oversized hardcover or anything like that, but it's beautiful, and some of the stories are, like I said, they're crazy. Like, some are just your standard sci-fi 1950s fare where, you know, somebody's a space explorer and they end up on another planet and shenanigans ensue, but some of them are just absolutely bizarre. They're like an Outer Limits television show episode or Twilight Zone episode. Super, super cool.
Yeah, dude, I've got mine here. I love this series. I don't have all of them, the Steve Ditko archives, but I've got like four of them. I've got volume 3, 4. No, sorry. I've got volume 3, 5, and 6. Yeah, so I've only got three of them actually. Yeah, here on my shelves. But I pulled this one off. I pulled it off the shelves, and it's got some great titles. And like you say, most of it's from the 50s, 58 to 59. But that's when sci-fi was big, right? Because of, you know, it was called the Atomic Age back then. You know, everybody was, you know, going nuts about astronauts launched into space, into orbit around the Earth. And a lot of these stories are sci-fi, but horror, though. Right, Billy? I mean, Ditko had a twist at the end of most of his tales. I don't have yet had time to go through all of this, all of the stories in here.
Yeah, I mean, so like you said, some are sci-fi and some are horror with like these insane like outer space, you know, creatures and monsters and stuff. Yeah, it's wild. It's great. I mean, Ditko is a genius. You know, we've said it before. He was, you know, a lot of people know him from, you know, Spider-Man and things like that. You know, Doctor Strange.
Strange, yeah.
But, you know, this is where he really weird, strange science fiction stories, you know, The Question. That's really more who Steve Ditko was as a writer and, you know, artist and creator. I shouldn't say writer, you know, an artist and a creator. That's really who he was, you know, when you get down to it.
Yeah, he was very much a creator that wanted to pencil his pencil and write his own tales. But mm-hmm. he could not always do that because of financial reasons. So he ended up working for Marvel. But then because of creative differences, he left because he did want to impose his own stories and characters on what he was doing. And he did mm-hmm. that with Spider-Man and Doctor Strange. I would argue that Doctor Strange is more Ditko than Stan Lee. In fact, you and I have argued that in the past, and Grant and I've done that too. And and then also Billy, you know, Spider-Man, you know, it went very Ditko-esque there after a while. Whoever conceived the idea might have been Stan Lee, but then Ditko designed the costume. And the later stories, especially in the when the issue hit the 30s, you know, The Amazing Spider-Man went into its 30s. Those issues became very Ditko-oriented, I'd say. And you saw less and less of Stan Lee. Only in the dialogue, of course, Stan still turned up. But, you know, with the Marvel method, Ditko was plotting and doing most of the, you know, the storytelling through the panels. So, I love these stories. Billy, this is a great pick, man. Anybody, if you can still find it, you know, like you say, you found this volume. I'm thinking some of them might be harder to find now, but you should get on that. Very
good
hard.
Luck. Good luck. I was looking before the show, and literally this number 6 volume is the only one you can find on the ready anywhere, Amazon or any other websites.
Oh no.
And when you go to eBay, the lower numbered ones are, some of them were over $100. Yeah, because they're out of print. So yeah, I wish that hopefully they'll reprint them. You know, I did look at our one of our favorite little small publishing companies, Gowandanaland, because I know they've taken some Charlton material that was not copyrighted correctly or at all or whatever and reprinted some of it, but this stuff is not part of it. So this stuff must have had a copyright.
Yeah, I mean, this is done by Fantagraphics, right, Billy? So they're normally very pricey, but good collections, well-bound. But not a lot of the print runs usually aren't huge, so that's why they go out of print so fast. And but if you can find it in the wild or on eBay, I'd say it's worth it. I can't remember how much I paid for my volumes. I probably bought them through Amazon when they were available initially, but I remember regretting that I couldn't get the rest of the volumes. So I'm still on the lookout for some of them. But I think they're available digitally if you want to read them on Comixology or something like that. So I think they are. I've seen them on a sale a couple of times.
Comixology has them, and somebody else has them digitally. I can't remember who it was, but Comixology, for sure, they do have it.
Excellent, dudes. Yeah, so Billy, great recommendation from you there. Ditko, you can never go wrong with him. He's one of our favorites, and he, you know, generated our favorite character of all time, which is Doctor Strange. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we got to thank him for that, if he was still alive.
Sure. So what do you got?
Okay, dude, I'm going to go in a different route. I'm not going to recommend a comic. I'm going to recommend something that's related to what we discussed today. Billy, I don't know if you've ever heard of the author Jonathan Lethem. He wrote two very successful novels, one being Motherless Brooklyn and the other being The Fortress of Solitude. Now they're very much inspired by his childhood growing up in New York City. Fortress of Solitude, of course, is also inspired by, you know, Superman's Fortress of Solitude, but it's more, you know, of a realist novel of, you know, so that's used as a metaphor in the novel, you know, the Fortress of Solitude being himself. You know, he grew up, you know, with a Fortress of Solitude, basically, a kind of mentality, you know. So he's a writer that's very inspired by growing up in the 70s era New York in Brooklyn. And he wrote a book, this is many years ago already, I think 15 years ago, but the book's still in print. It's called Jonathan Lethem's The Disappointment Artist. Now, Billy, what this is it's a series of vignette-type stories of his childhood. So it's almost like an autobiography, but not really. It's just about the things he loved as a kid growing up in New York City And the three most prominent things are the music of Pink Floyd, Star Wars, and The Vision. The Avengers character, The Vision. Those three things were his seminal influence. Now, this book is very short. It's like, let me quickly check here, 149 pages only, right? But it's written like an autobiography. I mean, tales from his childhood, basically, if you know what I mean. And it's him going through his life as a kid and then growing up, you know, loving the Avengers and becoming obsessed with the character of the Vision. And then, you know, listening to Pink Floyd, becoming obsessed with their music, and also then eventually Star Wars in 1977, and then him forcing his mother to take him to screening after screening after screening of Star Wars in New York as a kid. And it's just a great little, I mean, for comic book fans like we are, you know, geeks, fanboys, this is a great read, I'd say. I'd recommend that to our listeners. You can get it as a Kindle edition, or you can pick up the little paperback like I did. I've had it for about more than 10 years now. And, you know, as soon as I knew we were going to be talking about The Vision, I immediately got this off the shelf, and I was like, okay, I'm going to reread it. I reread it over the weekend, and it's still as good as I remembered. I got to mention this in the recommendations. Jonathan Lethem's The Disappointment Artist.
Cool.
Yeah, so that's it. That's all we have, right, Billy, for this week. Lengthy episode, but we had a lot to say about our favorite android and his Scarlet Crimson Beauty, Wanda. Mm-hmm. So get out there, folks. Watch WandaVision if you haven't. Billy, I know that's on your docket. You're going to get to that soon.
Yeah.
But there's so much to watch, you know, and you know, this is one of the many things that you know, there's out there. So, but, you know, I'm first going to head into our Allies of Agamotto, then we'll say our goodbyes. And this time around, we've got a bit of a surprise for one of our 5-star iTunes reviewers. So stay tuned for that, listeners, if you want to hear an alter ego that I cobbled together. This time around, it's for Mr. Kyle Benning, one of our Twitter mates. We mentioned him on previous shows. He's a podcaster himself and extremely well-versed in all the annals of comicdom. He knows his stuff. And I'm going to plug his podcast at the end after I've given him his alter ego. But he runs actually a couple of podcasts all on one feed if you want to subscribe to it. And I could recommend his shows. It seems that, I mean, Kyle, we've been listening to him for quite some time. But recently I had to do some research to come up with his alter ego. And I've noticed that Kyle, well, I've identified 4 kind of fandoms that Kyle is really, really into, but he likes a lot of other stuff as well. And these 4 are basically Superman, the original Captain Marvel, Shazam, as they call him these days, which is blasphemy. I just like to call him Captain Marvel. And then Transformers. And lastly, something he recommended to Billy and myself, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which I read a lot in the late 80s, early 90s, but I since haven't picked up any collections or issues. I just don't know why. Sometimes I just can't explain why I skip over some, you know, important books like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. But I remember liking it a lot, the black and white Kevin Eastman fair. So Kyle, he's been, you know, communicating with us, commenting on our shows, and he's been complimenting us, and I can compliment, you know, Kyle's show as well. I've been listening to it for a while. It's called the KSCGSF podcast, and he covers all kind of content on there. Most notably, like I said, he covers Superman, Captain Marvel. He's also at his Twitter moniker of @KryptonWizard, where you could find him. That's his main Twitter account for all things Captain Marvel and Superman, and the podcast he did about them. And he also recently appeared on a Treasury cast with Rob Kelly, and that's a pretty good listen. And on his own KSCGSF podcast, he's been covering Dark Horse Presents, which is one of my absolute favorite anthology comics of all time, the stuff that Dark Horse put out in the 1990s. And Oh, it's brilliant. He also recently did a John Byrne's Next Men review, and I'm crazy about Byrne's Next Men. So give Kyle a listen, and specifically check out his KSCGSF podcast. I promised I would plug that at the end of the Alter Ego, but here I've already plugged it, so I probably won't plug that again later, but I might remind you of where to find Kyle. All right, so Kyle, since you like those four fandoms, Superman, Captain Marvel, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and Transformers, I've decided to mix them all together and see what comes out. Also throw in a bit of Hermanisms in there. And I came up with this alter ego, so I really, really hope you like it. All right, here it is. Kyle Benning's Bronze Age Alter Ego. Born Kai-El on the planet Kryptonomicon, where science and magic rules hand in hand, Kyle, as he would come to be known on Earth, was indoctrinated into his society's dominant monotheistic robo-religion at an early age. Worshipping the supreme artificial intelligence Craniacs, and slated to become a cosmic missionary like so many of his peers, Kyle was nevertheless considered to be an anomaly on his planet. Some would even go so far as to use the word disabled when talking about him. For you see, young Kyle had been born without the personal, mystical AI-generated password other humanoids on Kryptonomicon were born with. A type of barcode birthmark, if you will. A typical Kryptonomiconian, when he or she came of age, could speak his or her unique password, thereby activating the magical hypernanites in their DNA code, transforming themselves into superpowered robots, each with a single unique ability. Sadly, due to a birth error caused by magical malware, Kyle lacked a barcode birthmark and had no password of power to utter in order to activate his dormant nanites. Frustrated during his teens, when all of his friends were coming into their mystical robo powers, Kyle decided to do something about it. Visiting a super seer called Algorithm, he learned that his mystic password did indeed exist, but that he would have to go on a quest to piece its sorcerous super syllables together. To do so, he would have to undertake a cosmic journey fraught with peril. Gifted with a starcraft and magic water-filled tracker compass called Torrent by Algorithm, Kyle set off in the guise of a missionary of Craniacs, the supreme god of code, to explore the four uncharted planets where the syllables of his power password might be found. The first syllable was easy. He tracked it to the planet Earth in Dimension 616, specifically to a field where three bovine Skrulls were grazing. Using a mystical app on his communicator called Zgitugug, the zoologist's guide to the galaxy, he identified these animals. With this, his first syllable had been found, and the syllable was Cow. Next, he ventured to the planet Gasp, where his sudden appearance in his sorcerous starcraft caused the entire population to exclaim the next syllable in awe, and the holy syllable was Ah. Then he traveled to the planet Reefer, where he visited shelled sewer creatures who seemed to subsist on a type of lettuce they called devil grass. Mingling with his hosts and partaking of their meals, Kyle entered a soporific state that allowed him to learn his next syllable. And the third syllable was Bong. The final syllable was located on the planet Infantium, where all the inhabitants resembled small humanoid babies. In the holy city of Gugu, Kyle learned the final syllable from the cherubic Mercury, a baby radio DJ with a prodigious mustache and an overbite. And the final syllable was Ga, rendering the four syllables in barcode form and engraving them on his lower back in the indelible ink of a space squid on the planet Tatooine in a galaxy far, far away, Kyle was finally ready to pronounce his power password. And the password was Cal-a-bonga. Cowabunga. Uttering it in a scream, he was instantly transformed by a burst of sorcerous static into his new red, white, blue, and yellow robo super form. He became the magical, mechatronic magus of mechanics called Marveltron. Marveltron, blessed with the power of not one, but nine ancient robo-gods from Cryptonomicon's pre-nano age. C, the mecha-telepathy of Communicatrix, goddess of machine language. O, the flight powers of Ornitholotron, robo-bird god of the skyways. W, the knowledge of Wikitome, god of accrued data. A, the power of Atomica, goddess of explosive might. B, the cloning abilities of Binary Link, goddess of duplication. U, the sonic powers of Ultravox, god of sound and speed. N, the stealth and invisibility powers of Napster Prime, god of thieves. G, the invulnerability of Graphenix, goddess of durability. And A, the transformation powers of Alteriosis, god of flux. All this, and he sported a pretty good cape to boot. How Kyle eventually ended up on Marvel 616 Earth again is a tale for another day. Suffice it to say that before his return to that idyllic field where he learned his first super syllable among those gently grazing Skrull cows, he had already saved his planet Cryptonomicon from the fascist leanings of the AI overlord god Craniax. He had defeated the malevolent escapees from the dark web zone, and he had destroyed the gamer demon from the war world of Warcraft. Now, Kyle lives among us as a nondescript human, frequenting comic book stores by day and moonlighting as a podcaster by night. But when evil rears its butt-ugly head, when Nazis crawl from the gutters of history, when villains like the paper shredder of doom come calling, you can bet your bottom Bitcoin dollar that a shout will ring out in the night air, loud as a thunderclap and clear as crystal kryptonite, followed by an electrical burst of mystical machinery. Evildoers, beware. Marveltron is near. And that's it, Kyle. You're Marveltron. Hope you like it, man. It's a little bit silly, I admit, but, you know, all my rants and, you know, ideas are. So, hope this qualifies as weird enough for Into the Weird, but not too weird for Kyle. Alright, so I promised I'd mention where you can track down Kyle on Twitter, listeners. And there's two main Twitter accounts that I follow of Kyle's. The one is arguably his most, popular one, or the one that he uses the most, I should say, which is at KyleBenning_art. And that is also the main account for his KSCGSF podcast. So follow him at KyleBenning_art. And then he also has the at KryptonWizard account where he talks all things Billy Batson and Clark Kent. And, you know, he's a worthwhile Twitter friend to have and to follow. Very, like I say, very knowledgeable about all things related to comics. So, Kyle, thanks again, bud, for the wonderful review. I forgot to actually read it to the listener, so let me do that now before it slips my mind again. Kyle gave us a 5-star review on iTunes, and he said, 5-star, Bronze Age goodness. Herman and Billy D cover some all-time Bronze Age classics, amazing coverage of some fantastic Marvel goodness. The subject matter may be weird, but the coverage is outstanding. 5 stars of pure audio ecstasy. Damn, Kyle, you've got away with words, man. So that's it for our Bronze Age alter ego and our Allies of Agamotto. I do want to, again, give a shout-out and a thank you to the great band Seven Kingdoms, who so generously loaned us their fantastic song In the Walls off their album Decennium. Please support them, folks. They're great. Listen, buy their stuff digitally or physically. They're an amazing power metal band, and I listen to them weekly. I listen to them multiple times during the editing process. So do so. Please support those guys, Seven Kingdoms. All right, that's it for another Into the Weird. Right, Billy? We'll leave the listeners with our contact details. Where can folks track you down online?
Well, definitely search me out on Twitter. It's at BillyD_licious. I'm always there creeping around and being kind of wild and crazy. And, you know, even during my work day, I'll even fire off some stuff because, you know, I need to keep my sanity somehow. And going to Twitter and hanging out with my good friends is the only way to make that happen during my work day, seemingly. So I'll be there all the time. And then, you know, I'm always there with the show handle, you know, at Into Weird as well. And then you and I going strong with our All-Star Squadron podcast. So at All Squadron as well.
That's right, man. Everybody on Twitter is a therapist. All of our friends, you know, they're therapy for us.
It is, really.
Once you and I log on to Twitter, it's like lying comfortably on a couch and then, you know, talking about some Freudian dilemmas with whomever's willing to listen. All of them are great. So thanks, guys, on Twitter. And thanks to the listeners of Into the Weird again, Billy. They support us and they're always there for us. And we love you, weirdos. And if you want to check out more Twitter shenanigans from not just Billy, but myself as well, check out Into the Weird. That we're at Into Weird on Twitter. And I'm at Dark Longbox. And you can also look for our podcast addendum post, which will feature some images full of Wanda and the Vision and everything we discussed on this episode. And you can find that at www.syncintotheweird.com. So have a look out for that. And I'll leave you with that, listeners. And for me and you, Billy, that's goodbye. I hope the listeners will hang around and survive long enough to be back for survive the apocalypse or Ragnarok or whatever you want to call it, to be back for another episode soon. And we hope you'll join us again for another jaunt into the weird. Take it easy, folks.
Let's stay weird.
Herself to madness with a silver spoon.